This is Danny and Gallant on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app and 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Call the play on the show.
I don't know if anybody else out there was as equally fed up as I was. I would like to see. I like Romo and Nance. I guess there are some people. The Graz does not care for Tony Romo, which always cracks me up because usually I feel like he's got a finger on the pulse. He doesn't like Romo at all.
He doesn't like a guy that goes, ooh, oh,
I kind of like it. I kind of like him. I'll admit it. I had a bias against him. Let's bring in Brock Heward for Blue 42. We'll talk to him about color commentators.
Here we go. This is Coors Light's Blue 42.
We're going to go red, right, tight, close, sprint left, G, U-corner, halfback, flat, on two. Ready,
fight! Blue 42 is brought to you by Coors Light. The mountains turn blue at 42 degrees.
Blue 42!
Now here's your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Blue 42! Blue 42!
Good morning.
Oh!
Is that your Tony Romo imitation? Oh, that's a little bit of Romo being played. It is Brock Heward who's joining us now. Brock, how are you?
I'm doing well. And yeah, I'm not going to hate on the guy that's probably going to, in talking to people in the industry, drive his salary up to some $15 million a year to do those moves and all and everything else. And by some people's account, may have the greatest leverage in the history of broadcasting as CBS doesn't have a backup plan. Monday Night Football is desperately coming after him. So God bless you, Tony Romo.
Rising tide lifts all boats, Brock. At least that's what I've heard. Question one. It sure looks like San Francisco's run game is a lot more innovative than Seattle's. Is that the case?
Yeah, I think it is more innovative. I think it has more depth, but I also don't think it's like a master's degree versus a GED or, Seattle does a bunch of really cool stuff too. And I think when we see it on full display yesterday with a healthy set of running backs, and I know Tevin Coleman got hurt during the game, but they went in that game totally healthy up front, totally healthy, in their running back room, totally healthy in their tight end room. It sure helps. Well, the one thing that they do have, Danny, that I love, that I've clamored for, that I would certainly love to see the Seahawks get back to, and that is a fullback. And when you've got the best fullback going in the league, it gives you even more versatility and I think even more depth in your run game. Chuck is just a monster, and he can block anybody, and he gets an edge, he can block safeties and linebackers, he can get out into the open field and handle, defensive backs. I mean, he is just a Swiss Army knife of a fullback, and I think you've seen them, really maximize his talent and add that to the run game. So, yes, they do more than Seattle, mainly because that fullback is just such an absolute weapon for them. And then they couple it with a really creative play-action game off of it. And, sign me up as one. And actually yesterday, as we were watching at the Dory Towers with Dave Wyman and Ray Roberts, Jordan Babineau and the crew and NASA and such, all of us really enjoying not necessarily San Francisco winning, but the X's and O's of what they do schematically.
Adding a fullback could help. Is there anything else that you see that Brian Schottenheimer could maybe take away from what San Francisco did yesterday?
Well, Mike Solari was also there. Remember that. Mike Solari was in San Francisco, the O-line coach. And usually a run game is both coordinator and O-line coach. And those two are really the two that go about putting that together, that study that line of scrimmage, that study the strengths and weaknesses of your group and your opponent. I, for one, was watching that game yesterday, really bummed that we didn't get to see Chris Carson. We didn't get to see Rashad Penny. We didn't get to see the full onslaught of, I think, what the Seahawks could have been able to do to that nickel and dime built defense of Green Bay. And that was just a ideal matchup for San Francisco's strengths. And, man, that was a disastrous matchup for the Green Bay Packers' weaknesses.
Question two. We just talked about San Francisco's offense. We all know what Kansas City's offense can do. Does Seattle have the capability to replicate some of what the Chiefs are able to do offensively?
Well, I think there would be a little bit more of a blend of these two, right? And there was so much talk last week, and there probably will continue to be over the course of this offseason about the Seahawks and falling short in their offense or their defense? Are they too conservative? Are they modern enough? And it was awesome yesterday watching old school San Francisco throw it 10 times and absolutely demolish the Packers. And then it was fun in the morning to watch the new school and to watch the Chiefs and Andy Reid and his creative schemes and his mix of tight ends and receivers and his vertical stretch and, you know, the quarterback and the artist that makes it all go in Patrick Mahomes. So if I were to say and kind of forecast, Paul, and look into this offseason and the crystal ball of next season and look at the talent the Seahawks have, I think that they'll really want to be as they were this year, a blend of both of those systems, the ability to throw it down the field and Russell as good as anybody. And, it, you know, when the dust all settled, I believe he had 2,000-yard receivers in DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett and a bunch of touchdown passes from Russell Wilson once again in that vertical game. And you also had a 1,100-yard rusher in Chris Carson. And so, you know, I think Pete always says it, man. We're not a run-first team. We are a balanced football team that is able to do whatever you got to do to win each and every week against your opponent. And I think that that will continue to be the philosophy offensively moving forward.
Brock, in that spirit, are the two games yesterday positive signs for Seattle's direction, like evidence that it can still work? Because you certainly could look at what San Francisco did and say, look, they won a championship, conference championship, made the Super Bowl while throwing 8 times. Or is it show the shortcomings of that? Because the Titans had Derrick Henry, and once he got bottled up, they didn't have much of anything else to try and keep up with Kansas City.
Well, they also had Ryan Tannehill. So I would say that the good news for you in Seattle is you've got Russell Wilson in his prime for at least the next 3 or 4 years. He was a whole lot more Mahomes than he was any other quarterback playing yesterday. I mean, Danny, I saw you tweeting about it, and Aaron Rodgers' body language is about as bad as anybody since Jay Cutler. I mean, it's absolutely horrendous. Ryan Tannehill will never be, you know, Russell Wilson or anywhere close to it. Jimmy Garoppolo in this playoffs has just basically had to hand the ball off for the majority of it and make very, 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 very few plays to put them into the Super Bowl. So I think the fact that you've got the most Mahomes-esque and Mahomes-like quarterback just about anybody else in this league, and you feel great about Russell, I think should give you plenty of optimism moving forward.
Brock, did you hear, though, Aaron Rodgers is having fun again? He explained this after the game, that he'll remember this as the year that he started to have fun again.
is he like the... Honestly, the king of BBL right now. Is there anybody,
yeah,
like, bad body language? Is there anybody even close to him quarterbacking in the league today that's close to his bad body language?
It's Jay Cutler-esque.
I've always thought Eli had terrible body language. I've always thought Eli's was just awful, but I think that's more because he's got resting pouting face. Like, he just looks like he's constantly like, oh, man. Like, it's just like he's just got this constant. It looks like his brother just gave him a noogie perpetually.
But
Rodgers,
oh gosh, tough.
Yeah, it's pretty bad to watch. Question 3. So we look ahead, Brock. I feel robbed. Instead of getting a rubber match, a third game between two teams that had two of the absolute best regular season games played in the NFL, We got to watch that, and I felt like, can't we just get a do-over? Seattle would have made that more entertaining.
Well, you know that San Francisco, when Green Bay ended up beating Seattle, was giving each other high fives, and that was the matchup they wanted. They wanted the featherweight in their building. They didn't want the heavyweight, albeit a heavyweight that was without Chris Carson, right, and was without Rashad Penny, and was without a bunch of its pieces. It was still a heavyweight that would come in with a heavyweight mentality to go punch for punch with them. And, you know, anytime you've got that matchup, and we saw it twice this year. We've seen it over the years, and got the bad blood between the two in the history. Yeah, Danny, I think it would have set up for just incredible drama and a much, much better matchup. I just think San Francisco, would have gotten ahead of the Seahawks, probably been ahead, I don't know, 17-0 as well. But I think the Seahawks would have rebounded and responded in much better fashion No, Green Bay was capable of doing it. But ultimately, Danny, you got to win, man. That's what we were saying watching that game yesterday. Like, the number one seed that's been proven, and been proven in Seattle, and you had every opportunity the last 2 weeks of the regular season, not just that game at Green Bay, but the last 2 weeks of the regular season to host these two teams. And if Seattle got to host Minnesota and got to host Green Bay, guess what? We'd all be going down to South Florida and getting ready to play in the Super Bowl, but you didn't. You lost to the Cardinals. That was the real bummer. You were an inch away from the 49ers and ultimately had to go the hard way and go out on the road, where in this day and age in the NFL, man, it is so incredibly difficult to do that.
I think what makes the NFL stand out, especially compared to sports like basketball, baseball, is that a playoff game, anything can happen. It's just one game. So you can see a team like Tennessee beating a team like Baltimore. If the Seahawks and Packers were to have played each other, I don't know, over a seven-game series, the Seahawks, as currently constructed at the end of the year with all those injuries and this Packers team, who do you think would end up winning more games?
And where would they be played? Because I think that's been the most telling, right? I mean, Russell has not won there. Aaron has not won here. So you tell me where, if it's seven games or four.
Put them in a neutral
Seattle,
site.
Green Bay.
Neutral site. How does it go?
At a neutral site, I think the Seahawks probably win four of those seven. Yeah, I think they probably do. But unfortunately, that was not the case. They had to go play on the cold country up there where, you know, that place has been a disaster since 1999. And you got to rectify that. And that to me is probably the most stinging of everything, is the Seahawks get on a plane and get ready to go coach that Pro Bowl and enjoy a great week down in Orlando. You know, that week 16 game against Arizona, to me, is just the one that stings as much as anything else this season, that it was right there. It didn't take like week four or week eight. You weren't out of that running. You got all the way to the very end in two home games, where if you could have taken advantage of two home games, you could have been the number one seed. And, as far as we watch these playoffs all unfold, I really do think they'd be in Miami if that were the case.
He is Brack Heward. That is Blue 42. We do want you to remember that our playoff coverage here on 710 ESPN Seattle is brought to you by the Washington Farm Bureau Healthcare. Brock, I will say that the one thing I really enjoyed yesterday, I did enjoy watching Aaron Rodgers lay that egg. He was awful. Like in the first half, because people at the end of it were like, well, his stats were really good. And yeah, but they were deceiving. That first half, he's 9 for 12 passing. Five of those completions were for 3 yards or less. Like five of those completions, he might as well have not even thrown.
Yeah, and he just wasn't creative, you know? Just when the pressure came, it was almost like, oh, great, here comes the pressure. What am I going to do about it? And fumbled a couple times. And, you know, I've got my little nephew, Sammy, who's an aspiring quarterback and a super talented thrower, unbelievable accuracy and anticipation. And he gets to play in a fun air raid system down there at Kennedy. And I tell him all the time, like, if I were in your shoes, right, and even over the course of my career, if there were some things I could have done over again, it was just that ability to play on the move. And sometimes that's hard to replicate and to practice, and you don't get D linemen that you go up against. And you can do different drill work and cones and movement stuff. But, man, your ability to create in this day and age, both high school, college, pro, when things break down, and you saw Mahomes do it, and he makes it look so easy. That's the thing that just blows my mind, watching the Wilsons and the Watsons and the Mahomes and those guys that do create. It's like, oh, okay, it's almost like part of the play. It's like not an issue at all. And that used to be a little bit more of Aaron Rodgers, but man, was he just bad at that yesterday. When that play broke down, he broke down into turnovers and fumbles. And yeah, that was a tough one for the Pack.
Sam Heward left-handed?
Oh, Sammy's a slinging lefty. Yeah, he is a slinging lefty.
Do you think he's going to become the greatest left-handed quarterback ever?
I would just like to see a lefty get back into the NFL. It's been a few years. I think Tua Tagovailoa is going to get drafted. He's going to change that. He's going to reverse the course and reset the direction of having some southpaws once again in the NFL.
True or false, and this is the last thing for you, Brock. You once had a quarterback's coach who, after having coached you for at least a few weeks, expressed surprise that you threw with your left hand.
That's kind of true. It is even more so. I think that was the coordinator, Tom Moore, in Indianapolis, who, yes, called plays that this didn't necessarily fit my left-handedness. Like, it would have been nice to flip that play over, that play action pass. But, yeah, he didn't really care too much about me or what hand I threw the ball with.
Brock, we love you, man. We'll look forward to catching up with you tomorrow on Blue 42.
Yep. That's Danny. See you, Paul. Thanks to y'all for making it happen, too. We'll talk to you guys tomorrow.
We do always appreciate that. Can you believe that?
No.
He's got a coach. He's been working with him. You think all this money and scouting that's been put into it. And I mean, Brock's a third-round draft pick and a guy who was a high-level prospect. A guy who John Schneider said that had some of the best arm talent he'd seen from a quarterback. Tom Moore was surprised he was left-handed.
That is really something else. There is definitely an agenda against the left-handed. Danny, in Catholic school, I'm fairly certain that I was left-handed, and I'm fairly certain that I also was persuaded to do things with my right hand.
No kidding.
Yes.
You think that they broke you of the habit?
Yes, I think my mom was a part of this. I think that the Catholic school that I went to, St. Paul's Elementary in Hingham, Massachusetts, was a part of it. There was a conspiracy. Because there are certain things that I can do like somewhat competently with my left hand. Like I'm not terrible at throwing balls with my left hand, but for whatever reason, they decided to move me to, I think, be right-handed. And I think it's entirely because of the desks, because those desks are all like right-handed oriented.
That part is definitely true. They messed up because we all know that left-handers last longer in baseball. Like, you can be a left-handed pitcher forever.
Yeah.
My wife is left-handed. And we were at a restaurant, Chang's Gourmet, which anybody knows it. It's up on Lake City Way. Absolutely fantastic congee with the Chinese donuts that are awesome.
Oh.
Chang's Gourmet, like endorsement from me. We're sitting there, and it's kind of communal tables. And one of the guys next to us, who was a white fellow like me, offered up the observation that there are no left-handed Chinese people. which at that point I kind of looked and I was like, huh, there's a lot of people in China. I mean, there's an awful lot of Chinese people, and you think – You, in your experience, you feel confident saying that none of them are left-handed. And then he offered up as proof, have you ever seen left-handed chopsticks?
What?
Think about that for a second. And he's sitting next to a person who is my wife's Chinese-American, but both her parents are Chinese. And she's using... what exactly would left-handed chopsticks look like? And at that point, I was laughing so hard, my wife kicked me really hard on the shin. It is Danny and Gallant, and yes, there are left-handed Chinese.
Wait, did he
people.
Alter There's his not... opinion? He just kept going?
No, Sharon just told me. He realized that I was laughing. It was awkward for everybody. I hope that he had a moment of clarity somewhere within that. It's interesting to hear Brock talk about the run game and how, because I know that group of Paul Moyer and Dave Wyman and Michael Bumpus, all of those guys sitting there and watching it, the appreciation that you have, because that was... The way the San Francisco 49ers beat the Packers was about as uncomplicated as possible. They just ran the ball. They ran the ball and they executed their run scheme. At the same time, it's not simple and it's not straightforward because of how that run game works and how they use the fullback. And there was one of them on one of the touchdowns where they showed how Juszczyk, the fullback, fakes like he's going to the right, basically alters his direction, goes to the left, and then ends up picking off Za'Darius Smith, who's the end on there, who thinks that the way that they executed it, I think it speaks to, it's an oversimplification to say that modernizing football is about throwing the ball, because you can do different things running the ball. You are able, running the football is not an outdated concept. There are opportunities to be creative.
You know, there once was a time too, and you mentioned fullback, wasn't too long ago. In fact, it was last year where I was saying, ban the fullback. There should be no fullbacks in the NFL because I thought it just clunked the game up and made it more boring. And my old co-host in Houston, Seth Payne, would bring up, no, man, fullbacks, they're changing the game again. The teams that have them are really good. I think you see it with San Francisco and Kyle Juszczyk. You saw what was missing from the New England Patriots running attack this year without James Devlin, who suffered a season-ending injury. And it's weird because where do you really find a fullback in college with the way that that game has changed so much? But it is something that I definitely think the Seahawks could potentially upgrade at. And it is one of many ways that I think that they could take a look at the way they run the football and find ways to better do it. And that's the funny thing, because this season they did have a very successful year running the football. They did a good job with Chris Carson. They did a good job with Rashad Penny. And you have to wonder what happens in that NFC divisional round game against the Packers. If both of those guys are healthy, I feel very strongly that they would have won. But they just did not have the ability to scheme Marshawn Lynch or Travis Homer into a successful day running the football the same way that San Francisco can do it with seemingly any running back. I mean, put any running back in there. Matt Breida, who had a big game this year. Tevin Coleman, you could put in, as we saw yesterday, Raheem Mostert. They have found a way to make every single one of their running backs work. And that's not to say that the Seahawks can't run the football, but I think when you watch these games, there are always small elements that you can take from another team and adapt your system and adapt your scheme. And I hope that Pete Carroll and company are not hesitant, resistant to that idea. Because, really, you should always be looking at what the other teams are doing around the league, see if you can create a trend, see if you can do something differently than everyone else, create a matchup nightmare that no one can figure out.
You encouraged or discouraged about Seattle's prospects next season based on what happened? That's a question for you out there on the text line, 710-710. Are you encouraged or discouraged? I found myself encouraged because I think that Seattle has one of the hardest things already licked. They're in every game. They're in every game. And in that way, that I think that they have a new team that has found its way and has rebuilt itself, and that you know they're going to be competitive in every game. And that's a really important baseline.
I am encouraged by the idea that they match up really well with the San Francisco 49ers. I am discouraged by the fact that you are going to have to probably sweep the 49ers to get a home playoff game. That is going to be really hard to do just given the way that these games have gone. And we all feel very good about Seattle's chances against San Francisco. I think a lot of us probably would have gone out on a limb and picked them to win on the road in San Francisco in the NFC Championship game, even with all of those injuries. That is the problem. They're in the toughest division in the NFC, and that's going to hurt them because the Green Bay Packers play in the MAC. That NFC North is garbage. It is an awful, awful division. There is no debating that. The NFC East stinks, and the NFC South, not very good either. But you happen to be in a division with three competent teams and another team in the Cardinals that can't be worse than they were this past season, and they were actually pretty frisky at the end of the year, as you saw when they beat you with Brett Hundley.
I like the fact they play in a good division. I think that it means when you get to the top of that division, you're ready to get to the
Iron sharpen iron.
Yes, I think it is. I think that there's a lot of similarities. If anything, this past weekend should make you more encouraged about Seattle being on the path it was back in 2012. Let's open up the phone lines, 206-421-3776. You got to be on your A game here because Jessamyn McIntyre's screening calls. We're not going to let any riffraff through. You got to prove your way onto the air, but we are going to take some calls and see, are you encouraged or discouraged on Seattle's prospects based on what happened this weekend? That's next on Danny and Gallant.
You're listening to Danny and Gallant,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios
on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
You encouraged or discouraged? Basically what you saw. Encouraging signs, you know that Seattle can stay toe-to-toe with pretty much anybody in this conference, and the fact that San Francisco, which absolutely whitewashed the Green Bay Packers. Seattle was, those were two games that could have gone either way. The downside, man, I'm not going to lie. It was tough to watch Frank Clark have that sack of Ryan Tannehill, and then when he goes crazy emotionally afterwards and sort of pays off all of the big words that he had about stopping Derrick Henry. And then Richard Sherman, well, I'm not going to say that I hated watching him give up the 60-yard touchdown pass to Devontae Adams, or almost touchdown. It wasn't great to then watch him have the game-clinching interception either. And you think, man, both of those guys probably could have helped Seattle. I don't think the Seahawks necessarily made the wrong decision with either one, but I think there's room to go either way on this question.
Four sacks for Frank Clark in these playoffs. And I think you, Danny, are much better suited to determine if Frank Clark would have been better this year than Jadeveon Clowney was. Clowney had the injury issues, which definitely at times hurt the Seahawks defensively, but you cannot deny the kind of impact that Frank Clark had in these playoffs. He definitely, at the very least, has to make the Seahawks look at themselves in the mirror and wonder really long and hard if they did make the right decision going with Clowney going forward. I think they did personally, but I have also covered Jadeveon Clowney for his entire NFL career.
There is room, and maybe we'll put that on the shelf for tomorrow. was the Frank Clark decision a good one? It's a complicated trade. There's a lot of layers to unravel. But that simple question, are you encouraged or discouraged? Let's go to Tay in Seattle on line one. Tay, you're on with Danny and Gallant. Are you encouraged or discouraged?
Good morning, Steelers. I am definitely encouraged by my Hawks. If you look at last year, we weren't supposed to make the playoffs with the team that we had. But, yeah, we make a wild card. We lose in that wild card round. This year, we come back stronger. We build with our team. With that Frank Clark deal, I think for the future, that was great for our team just because we got pieces for the future. Now we're in a position where we have our foundation set. We have our running backs. We have our quarterback, of course. We have stud receivers. We have our DBs. Our DBs now is just, okay, what do we have the luxury of good enough? Everybody knows we're going to attack the defensive line. We need to secure our linebackers, and we need to always keep going with that offensive line. But looking forward, the Seahawks are doing great. We've done great things over the past 2 years.
Checking a lot of boxes off on the defensive side of things, that secondary in particular. I wonder about the secondary. I like Shaq Griffin. I wonder about everyone else after Quandre Diggs in that secondary. I really do. And I liked what I saw from Marquise Blair a little bit last year, Danny, but I think that there are a lot more answers that need to be made on the defensive side of things.
Tay's right in this regard. They took a step this season, right? They were a better team in the regular season. They had a better record. They went further in the playoffs, and they're close to getting a chance to win in Green Bay. They took a step forward, and they've got three picks in the first two rounds of this draft. They should be able to have some success. They should be able to add to that with that and all their salary cap space. I also find myself, though, torn of like, yes, you were better. You also had a career year from your quarterback, and you weren't as much better as you would expect to be. And in fact, you got leapfrogged in the division by the San Francisco 49ers.
Did they take a step forward defensively?
No. They did not. They were worse defense.
Right. They took a step back. And I think you have so many things that you have to figure out as far as who you keep on the defensive side of things, specifically on the defensive line, before you look at your linebackers and before you look at the rest of the secondary. And if you're going to find those immediate contributors, you're going to be hard-pressed to find them. You could take a risk in free agency. And I know they've done a decent job with some of the guys that they have drafted in terms of developing them. Maybe not of late. We can get into that as the week progresses as well. But it's going to be difficult for them to, I think, get the defense to a level where they can have the kind of performances that San Francisco was able to force on Aaron Rodgers.
Let's go to line number three. Aaron is in Seattle. Aaron, what's your feeling after watching these games?
All right, here's my take. I'm discouraged, but I also think some people are being very delusional about thinking that this team is on the upswing where it was in 2012. And here's why. First and foremost, in 2012, we had Lynch at his peak. We have three running backs that in the last few years have been injured often, trying to come back from pretty big injuries. Our defense is not where it was in 2012. Instead of having two great up-and-coming linebackers, we have two linebackers that are entering the end of their careers or towards the later part of their careers. Clowney was much better when he had Watt next to him in Houston. He does not have Watt next to him here. So that's why his production was down. Unless Reed comes up, not going to improve. And last time I checked, we don't have an Earl or a Cam or a Sherman in their third or second year in the secondary on the upswing like 2012. So we got a lot more work in free agency in order to deal with, in order to get to that vibe. I don't know where this 2012 thing's coming from, because from a realist standpoint, that's what I see.
I agree with Aaron about the personnel differences. In 2012, the Seahawks had a defense that was in place, and they had the spending room to add both Michael Bennett and Cliff Avril that offseason. And they also had the feeling and the knowledge and the understanding, okay, we've also got the missing piece. The missing piece was the quarterback, and they knew they had their quarterback after that season. Right now, you know you've got a franchise quarterback. I would say that you know that you've got some talented running backs. I don't buy that there's two injury prone. They had a freak confluence of injuries.
It's a really rough 2 weeks.
Yeah, that's not, there's nothing that says or is sort of predictable about that. Or Chris Carson's a really good running back in this league. Is he the equal of Marshawn Lynch when he was at his peak? No, but you know what? Russell Wilson's a lot better than he was when Marshawn Lynch was at his peak. But that question about the defense, the one thing that I will say, and this added to the similarity, in 2012, there was a feeling that had Seattle beat Atlanta, they were going to go and play San Francisco, whom they had routed toward the end of the regular season, who they had absolutely destroyed with 3 weeks to go on Sunday Night Football, and everybody watched it, and it was just a trouncing. Second to last week of the regular season. This year, there's sort of that same feeling of, man, Seattle almost came back and beat Green Bay, and if they had, I think there's a lot of people, including 49ers, that were like, oh, man, I want no part of that Seattle team. Like, that is a much more frightening matchup for us. I think there's a similarity there as well.
The NFC is not that strong right now. I mean, it really is San Francisco and a bunch of other teams, and you could argue that Seattle's not that far away, just like Green Bay isn't necessarily that far away, I suppose, because at the very least, they have a solid core. Just Aaron Rodgers seems to be deteriorating before our eyes. So you should be encouraged from that standpoint. But the problem is you still need that home playoff game or a first-round bye, because once again, we have a Super Bowl featuring two teams that had first-round byes. Surprise, surprise. To our caller's point about the help around Jadeveon Clowney, that's a big thing. Because I remember when they traded for Jadeveon Clowney, I thought, you have Jaren Reed and you have Ziggy Ansah. Those guys should be able to feast because Clowney will draw double teams and triple teams. And he's right in that when J.J. Watt was with him, the teams had to pick their poison with Houston. You either double or triple J.J. Watt, or you double or triple Jadeveon Clowney. And one of the other guys was probably going to feast, assuming that they were at 100% health. No one was able to do that this past season. And that is an indictment on Jaren Reed. That is an indictment on Ziggy Ansah, but we saw enough of Ziggy Ansah to know that he's just probably cooked at this point in his career. Somebody else needs to be on this team that can actually take advantage of those double and triple teams, because Clowney was one of the most double and triple team players in the NFL, if not the, this past year.
They need one or two guys that are not on this roster right now to come in and be studs on the defense. It's, you need Jaren Reed to get back to playing at the level he was. You need Cody Barton to continue to develop. Hopefully Marquise Bear. But they're going to need an injection of talent on the defense. Like after watching this team, I don't think there's any doubt about that. That's the missing ingredient. And that's something that even proving that you can hang in there and go toe to toe with a team like the 49ers is one thing, but that certainly doesn't, this defense is missing parts still. They need more horsepower. Let's go to James in the Tri-Cities. James, your reaction after watching those two conference championship games?
I feel positive, boys. You got a franchise quarterback still who's in his prime. You got Bobby Wagner, who doesn't seem, I mean, it could have been scheme-wise being in the base defense all year long compared to what he was before, but he's still arguably the best linebacker in the league without keeping that. What I'm most encouraged about, though, is that you're in a position where you have a significant amount of cap room, and you got lots of good players that are hitting the free market that are unrestricted. Specifically, that I personally, you kind of hit it already with Jadeveon Clowney. He's one of the most double-teamed edge rushers in the league. You had Ansah, who is not the same guy. Reed was half gone, you know, a good part of the year, just didn't ever get into the drive and things. What I think is that they need to go out and they need to get Chris Jones from the Kansas City Chiefs. You have the money for it. Pay him and Clowney. And I would also consider Yannick from the Jacksonville Jaguars. That would give youth. That would give speed. You can't double team. You got to pick a poison. But I think that would give them the opportunity to be able to spend money in the right direction and bolster that defense again. And I would even consider letting go of Bradley McDougal and going and getting that safety out of San Diego Chargers. I forgot his name, but I think it's Harrison. But he's another young stud. I just think they need to get faster and have that dog in him again. And I think that that's what's going to bring Jadeveon back, because he kind of said at the end of the year, in his last interview, he said, I'm not going to go to anybody just because I want to make money. I want to go to a contender. I want to go to the Super Bowl.
I think you're going to be able to. Yeah, I appreciate that, James. Thanks very much for the call. I think you're right. I think Clowney does want to come back here. The question will be, can you re-sign Clowney and still add another impact player when it's hard? When you go trying to buy solutions in free agency, it can be tough. There was one outcome yesterday that made some people point to it as an example for Seattle to follow, and that's probably not the right way to approach it. Paul's going to explain why next here on Danny and Gallant.
You're listening to Danny and Gallant,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios
on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
We saw a Death Star in operation yesterday in the AFC Championship game. That is the Kansas City Chiefs offense. Even if they get off to a slow start, this is a team that can turn it on, and when they turn it on, they turn it on quickly. We've seen it now in their last three playoff games. We saw it against the New England Patriots in last year's AFC Championship game. They scored 0 points the first half. and slow starts in the first quarters against the Houston Texans and then against the Tennessee Titans. What they do is amazing. It's incredible. And I know that it made a lot of people that follow the Seahawks very happy yesterday because they think that the Seahawks maybe can emulate something like that. It is impossible to recreate a Death Star. We saw it with Starkiller Base in the most recent trilogy of Star Wars movies. It's just not, I think, doable, Danny, for the Seahawks to have that same kind of just potent passing attack offense that completely ignores running the football.
Why?
I just don't think that they have the kind of speed and the kind of athleticism that Kansas City has at every single position. And just think about it. Tyreek Hill, Sammy Watkins, in addition to Travis Kelce, and behind Tyreek Hill and Sammy Watkins, you have a Mecole Hardman, you have a DeMarcus Robinson, and that allows them to completely ignore running the football. I would like to see Seattle turn it over to Russell Wilson a lot more, as would I think most of the people listening right now. I just don't want people to start thinking that you can do the same things that Kansas City is doing on offense. I just don't think it's quite possible, because I do like Tyler Lockett, and I do like DK Metcalf, and I do think they have speed, but I just don't know that they have the same kind of speed that Kansas City does.
Isn't it the quarterback, though? To me, that's what makes Kansas City's offense go. Yes, the speed of players like Tyreek Hill and to a lesser extent, Sammy Watkins. And I might be wrong, but I've always thought of Watkins as someone who's not, he's not the fastest wide receiver out there. He was a top 10 pick, but he's not a 4.3 burner. Like DK Metcalf, I think, is a faster player than he is. I might be wrong about that. Travis Kelce's great. I think it's the quarterback that makes the offense. And in many ways, I feel that looking at Kansas City and the way they play it, you might as well go and compare it to Mike Leach's air raid, because there's just no way Pete Carroll will ever do that. Like, that's not the kind of offense that he's willing to run. You're going to get with Pete, and it's not that he's getting a bad rap in that people can characterize him as being conservative and that he's kind of like Marty Schottenheimer 2.0, where it's just play action pass is about as exotic as it gets. They huck the ball down the field. Like they take shots. It's just that they also, especially in the first half, that's dosed with heavy, heavy increments of the run. They want to play it close to the vest for the first quarter and a half. I don't know if it's their speed that keeps them from doing that. I certainly think between the two offenses, it's more likely to say, hey, can you get something that looks like what Kyle Shanahan does? Specifically, are there ways to incorporate some of the things that San Francisco does running the ball to the way Seattle runs the ball? Because there's a certain amount of, okay, Seattle, Mike Pettine basically decided that he was going to stay in a nickel defense and not have eight guys in the box. And Kyle Shanahan then absolutely ran it down his throat. To me, that's what happened. The difference is that Seattle, when they see eight guys in the box, they're like, well, we're still going to run it. Like, well, I don't know if that's the best thing. Like, maybe it's becoming more of a reactionary team to what your defense is doing. That if you got eight guys in the box, let's look at throwing the ball. And if they got seven of the guys in the box, then look at running it and taking it more of that approach. Because to me, I just thought that Mike Pettine, the Packers defensive coordinator, he refused to adapt to what was being done to him. And so he had the ball run down his throat all night long.
That's so NFL, a refusal to adapt. And we see it here in Seattle, too. We can't just make fun of Mike Pettine for doing it and for not being able to evaluate quarterbacks properly, like saying Russell Wilson's not elite, not a top 10 quarterback, thinking Johnny Manziel might be some point in time. At the same time, just for whatever reason, coaches just refuse to add on to what they do and also to change midway through a game. Sometimes they do it, but they do it far too late. And, you know, I think for those who would like to see Seattle's offense change going forward, and I think that there are a couple of games that you can look at and you can talk yourself into Seattle being a lot like Kansas City on offense. I think you look at that Buccaneers game where Seattle decided, you know what, we're just gonna not run in the second half of that game. We're just gonna throw. We're gonna turn it over to Russell Wilson. We're gonna let Russ cook, as the cool kids say. And it worked out really well. I feel like there should be games where Seattle does that. What I'm saying, though, is you can't do that every single week. That Kansas City is making this work every single week without a running game to speak of, I think is an anomaly. I really do. You have to have some semblance of balance. And maybe it's because Patrick Mahomes is mobile and very similar to Russell Wilson on that standpoint. I mean, his touchdown run against the Titans that basically won the game for Kansas City right before halftime was one of the best runs that I have seen by a quarterback. And it's very surprising because you'd never expect Mahomes to be able to do it. He moves like a faster version of Aaron Rodgers. He seems to have the exact idea of where he needs to go for a first down before slinking out like a little kitty cat.
I think of he and Deshaun Watson is very similar. Like they're neither one is a running quarterback, but they both can run. Neither one of those guys is someone whose speed you're necessarily going to build around, but both of them, when put in that situation, absolutely can run. They're 20 years ago, they would have been above average running quarterbacks. Right now, they're guys that can move too. They're just not running like Lamar Jackson or maybe like Russell Wilson was early in his career. Though Deshaun Watson's had some pretty incredible, his ability to take hits is ridiculous.
Yes, he can spin around. But both of those guys have the mentality to throw first. And I think Russell Wilson also has the mentality now at this point in his career to throw first. We've seen it. He'll stay back. He'll stand in there and he'll look for something to develop downfield before eventually chucking it there. I think there are games where Seattle maybe can try and emulate Kansas City. I just don't think every single week the idea of just going away from the run entirely, I think balance is important. You have to play practically a perfect game, and I think Kansas City is unique in that they can come so quickly back into games with just their ability to strike it down the field. Like, you have some speed here. You don't have Tyreek Hill. I don't know that we're going to see another Tyreek Hill-level player in the NFL in the next 10 years. That speed... Do you think it's replica?
I don't. But I also think that Tyler Lockett and DK Metcalf are statistically two of the better deep threats in the league.
That's definitely true.
They are absolutely up there with toward the top in what you can expect a wide receiver to do. So I'm not sure if it's the lack of speed that's the reason for that. I think there's a decent conversation to be had about whether or not having a pass oriented offense and a team that passes 60 to 70% of the time, whether that is more conducive to success in the regular season than it is to championships. Because for all the success that Peyton Manning had, he won as many championships when he was not a good quarterback as he did when he was an elite quarterback. He won as many Super Bowls when his team was built around its defense as he did when it was built around its offense. My theory on that is that when you get to the playoffs, it takes once. And you have to win at least three games against elite defenses. Only one of them has to come up with a game plan or have an advantage that throws your passing game into the gutter, and then you lose. You have to win three straight against really good offenses, and the difficulty of doing that is pretty high. And if you're a balanced offense, if you can run the ball, you've essentially got two paths to victory because Right. maybe you can control the ball and run your way to it. And if your quarterback is absolutely being bludgeoned, well, you got something else to rely upon.
We've seen Kansas City in the past struggle to close teams out too because they don't have that running element, and they're in this weird spot when you're winning and you've passed the ball as much as you do of how do you run the clock out, and then all of a sudden you find yourself running out of bounds accidentally. But I think also, forgotten in this, Kansas City's defense, and I will admit it, I was definitely not impressed by it during the regular season, but they did a very good job yesterday, yes, against Ryan Tannehill, in shutting Derrick Henry down. Good job by Frank Clark, backing up those words that he gave to James Palmer of the NFL Network on Friday. Danny Gallant, he is Danny O'Neill. I am Paul Gallant. It was a frustrating weekend. There were no Seahawks in the conference championships, but there was one thing that I think we all took a lot of enjoyment out of. What was that? Danny's going to lay it out for you next. It's Danny Gallant, 710 ESPN Seattle.